It's Wednesday, March 11th, 2015, and this is KBIA's Views of the News. Our weekly roundtable on media behaviors comes to you from the Futures Lab studio at the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Amy Simons, and here with me are my colleagues Mike McKean and Ernest Perry. On our program this week, Gigome goes belly up. One of the first and most influential tech blogs out there abruptly closed up shop on Monday. First, Apple changed the way we bought music. Is TV next? We'll talk about the new partnership with HBO that will make that premium network available without a full-on cable subscription for the first time. And we'll look at some of the coverage of the 50th anniversary of the March in Selma. There's a whole lot more, hopefully, that we're going to get to as well before the half hour is up, but let's start with Hillary Clinton and those emails that just aren't going away. Yesterday, she finally talked to reporters about her use of a private email address while in office as Secretary of State.
Looking back, it would have been probably smarter to have used two devices, but I have absolute confidence that everything that could be in any way connected to work is now in the possession of the State Department. And I have to add, even if I'd had two devices, which is obviously permitted, many people do that, you would still have to put the responsibility where it belongs, which is on the official. So I did it for convenience, and I, now looking back, think that it might have been smarter to have those two devices from the very beginning.
Two devices, meaning separate mobile devices, one for a personal email, one for one from the federal government. It took more than a week to get just that much out of her, and it became clear by the day that the media wasn't going to let up until Hillary Clinton spoke about this. They weren't just pressing her, they were pressing others too. Here's how her husband, former President Bill Clinton, responded.
Do you think your wife's been treated fairly with the emails?
Come on over. Matt, come on over.
I'm not the one to judge that. I have an opinion, but I have a bias.
Tell us your opinion.
What's your President Clinton, what's your opinion?
Thanks, folks.
Okay, but I shouldn't be making news on this.
Current Secretary of State John Kerry's response wasn't all that different.
I think we have all the ones that are state.gov, which are appropriately the ones in the purview of the department. But let me check on that when I actually have time to pay attention to such an important issue when I get home.
So clearly the Clintons and John Kerry not wanting to talk about this very much. Is this still the big news story that we thought it was when it first broke last week?
Well, it's still a big news story. I mean, I think that she raised as many questions as she answered. Mm-hmm. She's not satisfying either the Republican critics, nor is she satisfying some of the journalists who are raising these issues about transparency and security. She didn't answer enough. She didn't say whether or not she would. Well, she did say she wouldn't turn over the servers and she wouldn't turn over all the content. In fact, she says she deleted a lot of stuff that she felt was personal. So it still comes back to what it was from the very beginning. Do you trust Hillary Clinton or don't you?
Yeah, I think this has basically become a trust issue. And just before we taped this, there was a story that came across in the New York Times, which is talking mainly about the fact that she doesn't have a viable opponent once the campaign gets going. Mm-hmm. And the opponent is going to be the media. And this happened when Kerry ran for office. It happened when Al Gore ran for office because there wasn't another viable candidate for them to run against. So the candidate becomes the media because the media is the one that's going to be the one that asking the questions and posing these challenges. But they also craft a narrative. And I think that's one of the things that she's keenly aware of right now is that they're going to craft a narrative whether you answer or not. And so it's best for you to get out there and answer those questions and deal with it. But I think she didn't do it in a timely manner.
That was going to be my question. If you're saying get out there in advance of it, it took a full week from the first New York Times story on this.
I think she's going to learn a lesson here is that when something comes up, you need to get out in front of it. I thought she would have learned that by now.
I'm not sure that she is going to learn that lesson or she thinks that that lesson is worth learning. I mean, there was all this talk yesterday. Mara Elias and another analyst were saying, well, it's showing her that she needs a staff sooner than later so somebody can come out there and talk about this earlier. If Hillary Clinton doesn't want her staff talking about this,
they're not going to talk
about that. And I don't think she wanted to talk about it. She was forced kicking and screaming into doing it. And you can say it's not that big a deal. you can buy her argument that, well, I just didn't want to have to carry around two cell phones.
How many of us have ever been in a position of having to carry around two cell phones? I did that for probably a year and a half, 2 years, as I made my transition from living in Chicago to living in Columbia.
And really, what does it matter? She also has now an iPad, an iPad mini, and she has two cell phones. But who cares? She's the Secretary of State. She's not, or she was. She's not you or me. So if she has to be inconvenienced to have a cell phone for public life and a cell phone for private life, well, that's the price of being one of the most powerful people in American government.
Which is not also that uncommon, even for people who aren't government employees.
But I think the larger issue here is the fact of how she handled this and how she's handling it. And hopefully this is a lesson that she learns that, you know, either her or staff, someone, that when these issues come up, you're going to have to respond to them because you don't have another candidate on the Democratic side that the media can go to and ask, well, what do you think about what Hillary has done? You don't have that. So they're going to focus all of their energy on what she's saying or what she's not saying, how she's handling or how she's skirting the issues.
And I do think you're right that the media are not going to allow her to get away with sort of these glib false comparisons to John Kerry or to George W. Bush or for that matter, to Jeb Bush. Yeah. None of them had a private server in their home for their private email accounts.
That they control in perpetuity.
Right.
Well, it was one of the first tech blogs out there, and now it suddenly ceased operations. Gigome. Managers posted to the homepage on Monday saying creditors were taking it over, and it wasn't really known just yet what would happen next. Mike, Gigome was really a pioneer in this space.
They've been doing technology reporting for about 10 years now, and they were one of the leaders. They had a really diversified sort of business strategy, and so everybody kind of thought, well, if anybody's going to be able to keep going in this space, they would, and yet they're one of the first ones out. It's not like there aren't other sources. There are lots of other sources for technology news right now, but they were one of the bigger players, and when it comes to talking about the intersection of technology and journalism, they were really a go-to source. I mean, Matthew Ingram, one of their writers, he was just fabulous. He was probably the person I would go to more often than anybody else to see how people covering the tech sector viewed its impact on journalism.
What I was really interested in was the way in which it happened. I mean, it's one of those, okay, we're all working feverishly to get the next thing out, and then all of a sudden we find out we're out of money and everything is shut down. And that seems to be a trend in how you manage these things, not just in the tech sector like this, but even in the legacy sectors, is that abruptly things just stop or everything's shut down, and then people find out either by email or an announcement that's made to someone else, and then that's how employees find out about it, which I find a little disconcerting.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not so worried that they're gone as a source of information for technology news, because there are plenty of others. I mean, there's TechCrunch, there's Recode, there's Mashable, there's Wired, The Verge. There's a whole bunch of titles out there, technology blogs that do a really good job. But what Ernest is talking about, look at the parallels to the traditional media, because what they were trying to do at GigaOM was they were doing things besides selling advertising for their coverage. They were giving premium service as research reports to the industry, something newspapers have been trying to
do. Yeah.
They're sponsoring big events and charging a lot of money to attend those events,
which legacy
something
are
legacy
events.
Media are
is
doing.
Now,
and if they can't make it work, can traditional legacy news organizations make it work?
Well, interestingly enough, one of the last big stories that GigaOM covered before closing at close of business on Monday was the big Apple announcements. Some of the biggest news broken at that Apple meeting on Monday had little to do with Apple. It was really all about HBO. The premium cable network announced the launch of a new HBO Now online product that would give people access to programming via Apple devices, streaming for $14.99 a month. The bigger news, this is going to be the first time that HBO programming is going to be accessible to folks without a cable subscription. Apple changed the way we buy music and listen to music. Is TV and television consumption next?
I think this could be a big game changer, especially for cable, the premium channels on cable, because if people can now access that through their iPads, through their iPhones, through their iWatches, you know, now all of a sudden you don't need to have that. you don't need to have that premium channel. Mm-hmm. And if the cable companies or even the satellite companies aren't selling those premium packages, then all you're getting is the basic. And that's going to be huge, but it's also going to have an impact on Hulu and Netflix and all of them, because now they're going to be in a race to make these same kinds of connections with Apple and Android and all the other devices.
I mean, it really is another instance of how these technology companies and leading edge innovators in media are trying to appeal to the cord cutters, right? This generation that either doesn't want to pay these huge subscriptions, is cutting the cord, or never got in the habit of buying them in the first place. It's funny, though, how Apple especially tends to suck up all the headlines when just a few months ago, Dish Network started offering a service that's already out there where you can get ESPN, which I dare say probably attracts more people to cable than HBO does. HBO is big, but ESPN is even bigger. For $20, you can get them and CNN and TNT and a bunch of other programs without having to have a cable subscription either.
Or CBS now making an online streaming.
But the thing with HBO, it is important because, and they're timing it. So, one, it's coming out just before Game of Thrones, right? So
and I'm looking at one of the biggest Game of Thrones fans I know right in front of me.
Love that show, and that is the big moneymaker for HBO, one of the big moneymakers.
At least right now, that's probably the biggest one.
So, you know, the timing is good. It's not exclusive forever. It's exclusive for 3 months.
Yeah, the length of Game of Thrones.
Then Roku and the other, and Amazon and others will have access to it, too. But It is important because I do think that Hollywood and maybe even eventually the news business is going to say, is cable the place we need to be?
And I think what happens is that, you know, by doing these exclusives, the companies themselves, Apple, Android, Roku, they get a head start. Mm-hmm. So now everyone has already bought into that subscription. They've already paid their $14.99. And they're just going to continue to do that even when that exclusivity clause is gone and expired. So I think by HBO positioning itself, and Dish Network to a certain extent, positioning themselves in that way, they're going to get that head start, and that's going to sort of make them the connector between the consumer and the content provider.
So the big news that Apple was hoping we would take away from this on Monday was the launch of the Apple Watch. Mike, we talked a little bit this morning about what this might mean for journalism. Maybe the idea that we have another delivery channel we need to be thinking about now and delivering people content that can be read on the face of a watch.
Yeah, and I think that's really an interesting question, and we're probably going to have to confront it. But I must say the reviews about the Apple Watch, now that we can actually see it, the reviews have been pretty mixed. I mean, one, it's very pricey, and a lot of people were making fun of the $10,000 gold version and all of that. I don't know whether we'd really be better with it or without it. I mean, you have to have an iPhone to make it work. Yeah, okay, there's some health benefits, and you can get headlines, and you can call an Uber or whatever from it. That's all very cool, but I don't know if it's worth an extra $370 minimum to be able to have that functionality. Journalists, I don't know. How much news can you get on the face of a watch?
And we're already talking about tweeting and how much you can actually communicate in 140 characters, especially if there's a link on the face of a watch that's teeny tiny.
Here's the part that I think is unusual is that, okay, we're talking about the watch and its small face when Apple has been pushing the larger iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have bought into that. So they're going larger with the phone, but then they're also going with the watch. And you have to have them both in order to make it work, and you're having to pay this premium to get the watch.
And what's that watch going to do that device that's already in your pocket can't do? So that hand with the watch attached to the wrist, you can just as easily put that in your pocket, pull out your phone,
and
get the exact same information.
But let's just say that when it comes to Apple, one of the biggest companies in the world, you can't really judge them by logic. I mean,
well, that's true. When the iPad first came out, there was plenty of consternation and making fun of the iPad, name, the whole deal.
Basically, everybody says, you know, when they're talking about Apple, they're really good at making people want things they didn't know they wanted. So I wouldn't count out the watch.
And you're right. It's the brand. And as long as everyone else has it, then I feel the need to have it too. That's a part of their marketing strategy.
I am going to go out on the limb, and I will be willing to be wrong if we're talking about this in a very different way 6 months or a year or 2 years from now. But I also look at what happened with Google Glass and the fact that 3 years ago, anybody who had Google Glass, they were among the elite and they were going to be the next big thing. And now even the biggest fans and biggest proponents of that wearable technology not.
But Google Glass looked dorky, and these watches do not necessarily look dorky. They can be made to look like fine jeweled watches.
But the real key for whether or not this takes off is going to be price. They're going to have to figure out a way to bring that price down considerably, because at the rate that they're at now, I don't think it's going to catch on.
I don't know. They've sold millions and millions of iPhones at a premium price, and millions and millions of iPads.
They've leased a million of those phones.
Well, I'm perfectly willing to be wrong, and hopefully, if I am, years from now, I welcome our production staff to go back and pull this and make fun of me at will. CNN is looking for new ways to generate revenue, aren't we all? And now they are considering adding advertising to the ticker at the bottom of the screen. They're saying it would be subtle, but kind of mixed in at the same time with content that would be along those same subject lines. What are your thoughts on the idea?
I'm surprised they hadn't done it.
Yeah, I kind of am too.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that I feel they're headed.
Or that they hadn't already been doing it. Yeah, I had to go look and say, oh, what do you know? There isn't any ads.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think KLMU's been doing it.
For
years. The sports channels have been doing it for years. Whenever you're watching a basketball game, a football game, or whatever, you know, right after you hear that information, then a little ad comes in between, or they've stuck it in a corner somewhere. So I think this is something that it could be a revenue generator. They need the revenue. I don't see where it's going to be that much of a distraction to the viewers.
Yeah, for whatever reason, anything CNN does these days gets a hyper focus from all of the media. I mean, MSNBC has been doing this on Morning Joe with Starbucks forever, right? And there's lots of other examples of how their competitors are doing it. So is it revolutionary? No. Is it going to cause people to be in an uproar about it? And maybe the media writers who cover CNN, but I don't think it's a big deal.
Okay, well, so speaking of CNN, this weekend its coverage of the 50th anniversary of the march in Selma, it had some bells and whistles like this. The first time the FAA approved use of a drone in news coverage. Our TV and web audiences right now are looking at some pretty beautiful video of an empty Edmund Pettus Bridge. It looked cool and pretty, and sometimes there were some cool things going on there, but was this a case of doing something cool simply because we could? There were bells and whistles that we could go ahead and take advantage of, but there's not a whole lot of context to what we're looking at right here.
You know, this particular video that we're looking at right now with the flyover of the Edmund Pettus Bridge, I mean, it's really kind of interesting video, and the music behind it is very thoughtful, and then the graphics that are on there sort of spelling out the history, the timeline, it's all fine. The problem was how CNN decided to promote it. I mean, constantly their reporters and their anchors were talking about, look at us, look at us, we've got this drone up there, look at us, it's about the drone, when it really should have been about the 50th anniversary.
And I think that's where I have the problem. It's not about the organization that's doing the news, it's about the story itself. And if they would have concentrated on that and let the images and the words that they use speak for themselves and then cover the event, I think they would have gotten a lot more out of it than, hey, let's promote CNN and our use of a drone.
No, I mean, I thought actually that this, as a use of a drone, and as I said, the purposes of news coverage, this is one of the first opportunities for large organizations, to do it
in this country.
That is fine. And that's the kind of thing you would want to use that technology for. You just don't need the ceaseless beating of your own drum. You're inviting ridicule.
And I think the problem that CNN and several of the other cable news organizations are having right now is that they're spending a lot of time trying to promote their brand, and their brand is being exclusive to this kind of reporting or this kind of coverage of this event or that event, and that should not be the story if you're saying that you're a news organization. And I think they're sort of presenting themselves in one way, and the audience is starting to see, wait a minute, it's all more about you than it is about the story.
I must say, though, CNN is not the only one who's guilty of
this.
If you look on our links blog, Amy, you've got a post there from USA Today, and within that story of their 50th anniversary piece, stuck right in the middle of it is this note about how we're using a 360-degree camera, and you can slide your mouse over it, and you can watch people from any angle. So what? It's just that we're so desperate to see if any of these new technologies, drones, 360 cameras, virtual reality, 3D, something can generate more revenue for the news industry.
Yep.
So let's talk about some of the coverage that maybe brought in some more of the context or some of the stories that resonated a little bit more. Specifically stood out.
Well, I think, speaking of USA Today and the stories on our links blog, I think one of their reporters did a really good story of looking at what's happened to Selma since since the march, mm-hmm. since Bloody Sunday, and the fact that poverty is even worse now than it was at that time. About what happened in terms of white flight, what's happened to that area in general in terms of economic development moving away, and that I think is more of a story that resonates today, where you take what happened from a historical perspective and then bring it into the present and then talk about what could possibly happen in the future. There were very few of those stories out there. A lot of them talked about the president's speech, which was a very good speech. A lot of them talked about who was there and who wasn't there in terms of you had a lot of Democrats there.
Turning it into a political story.
Then I read one story about how, I think it was the New York Times, cropped out former President George W. Bush, when in fact they didn't crop him out.
And there's a whole lot of information on our Links blog about that specifically, too.
I mean, we might talk about that a little bit. I mean, it just was ludicrous that Fox News was, of course, the one pointing this out, that somehow they had decided to leave out President Bush. He and Laura Bush were on the front line, but they were way far away from President Obama, right? And so you have to think, what's the explanation that the New York Times gave? Was it some conspiracy of trying to not show Republicans? Or was it the fact that, as the Times photographer put it, the light wasn't right and it was reflecting more off of Bush in that particular shot? He didn't even submit that photo. It wasn't that they cropped it. And if you read the New York Times story, for all you conspiracy theorists out there who believe everything you see on Fox News, just read it. It talks about President Bush being there. It talks about other Republicans being there. It is not a one-sided story.
And that was the problem that I had, is that some of the journalism got drawn into the political atmosphere that's going on right now in terms of Democrats and Republicans, both within state legislatures as well as in the national government. And they took a story which really could resonate about what happened historically, where we are now, like I said earlier, and they took that story and just turned it into this political back and forth gamesmanship. And I think that's where journalism loses a lot of its luster, because people don't want to read that and they back off and they say, hey, you know, I don't want to read or hear any more about the infighting going on. Give me something else.
Right.
So I stopped watching Scandal about a year ago or so, when it seemed like the storyline had stalled. But Thursday night, it was the show everyone was talking about. Take a listen to this clip and see why.
What's his name?
Brandon Parker. 17. Matched the description of a suspected shoplifter a couple blocks away. Officer stops to question him. Kid pulls a knife. Officer shoots him well within his rights. And now we've got a dead black kid put there by a white officer.
You need me to handle the optics?
I run a clean force.
The last thing I want is a riot that sets my city on fire.
How long has the body been here?
Half an hour. Waiting for the coroner.
The coroner needs to get here fast. You need to move that body out of the street as soon as possible. We are four short blocks from the Capitol, within the shadow of the White House. One misstep.
Insiders say Shonda Rhimes have been itching to tackle this subject since last August with the events in Ferguson. We have a couple of columns and blogs with reaction to this episode. A lot of people said it made them really uncomfortable.
Well, I mean, it challenges a lot of core assumptions. It challenges what people are thinking about in terms of police interaction with ethnic minority communities. And when you put that in a dramatic series that people are looking at it in terms of going in one direction and then it goes in another, people are sort of a little weary about that. And I think that's where you're getting some of this from.
Well, and so the real life Michael Brown shooting in the aftermath is a messy story. I mean, there's just a lot of angles to consider. And there probably wasn't anyone who comes off in that story as being absolutely pure and clean. And so here's Hollywood's version, where they can have the officer is absolutely guilty. He planted a knife on the young man. He was innocent. He wasn't involved in shoplifting. So it's the fantasized version of what Hollywood thinks the Michael Brown shooting should have been about. It wasn't about that. Does it cause us to think about and talk about some of these issues? Maybe so. It was just kind of a little weird for people who watched that show to see them dropping this really sort of serious take on a real life event into something that's not very real life in the rest of the season.
So before we go today, I want to talk about an interesting story that comes out of El Paso, Texas. KVIA TV reporter Pilar Arias ended her report on a proposed merger of two schools, thanking the district's PR staff for giving her the information. We'd play it for you, but KVIA pulled the video from its website. So I'm going to read to you what she said. Quote, I would like to thank the El Paso Independent School District Public Information Team for giving me this information tonight to give it to you first before you hear it anywhere else. Never mind the fact that the story wasn't exclusive, that there had been a much more detailed plan of this merger on the El Paso Times' website 30 minutes before the newscast. Who thanks PR people like that on live TV?
I heard this over the weekend, and the first thing that popped into my mind was, Lord, please don't let her be a Missouri School of Journalism graduate, which she wasn't. And I don't know how you do that, why you would do that.
Neither did her bosses.
Yeah, there's no need to thank anyone. It's information that they should be given to the public via the media.
That's why they're called public information officers.
Exactly.
And it's just one more example. We've had a couple of others on this show today about sort of this whiff of desperation. I have to say that this is an exclusive story. Why do you have to say that?
Well,
by the way,
sweeps.
KVIA, not KBIA.
I wanted to enunciate that too as well. KV, as in Victor, IA. TV.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I mean, I think Mike is exactly right. I mean, it's that promotion thing again. It's that trying to create some sort of a brand, something that by saying these things, you're going to leave the impression with the audience that this is the place to come to get your news, not the other place, because we're going to give it to you first. And sometimes you step over a line when you do that. And this is one of those instances.
Can we talk for a second about transparency? I had originally pulled that video clip to be able to play her the close of her live shot for everyone to hear that. And between the time I first heard about this on Saturday or Sunday and the time we went to go use that on Monday and Tuesday as I was putting the show together, the station pulled it off of its website. Let's talk about corrections and maybe lack of transparency there.
Well, I think that they're protecting the brand.
Yeah.
They're protecting the brand. They knew this story had gotten out. It was on Romanesco. It was all over. And they were saying it's better for us to pull that than to just leave it up there.
And if this
would
is
you
how
have pulled it though?
No, and this is how people are. If media are going to try to hide their faults by pulling their video, why are we complaining about Hillary Clinton maybe hiding the emails that she didn't want us to see?
Exactly. We make corrections. We need to be transparent about those, and we need to be clear about it and not sweep them under the rug. Well, that music means we're pretty much out of time for this week. I'd like to thank you for spending the last half hour with us. You can read more about all of the topics we talked about today and one or two we didn't get to. They're all on the Links blog under the Programs tab at kbia.org. Like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Our handle is @viewsonkbia. These are all great ways to watch and listen to our program again, leave us comments, questions, see previews of what we'll be talking about next week, and more. Our thanks to RJI's Travis McMillan and to Maya Jackson for directing today's show, and to Pat Akers for handling the audio. Kristen Rolwing is our associate producer. I'm Amy Simons. Be sure to join us again next week when we're back with you for another edition of Views of the News.